Welcome to the Irresistible You podcast. This is the place to get a dose of empowerment to create the life you crave and deserve. I'm your host, Amy Beltran, CEO and founder of Irresistible University. Through my signature online coaching program, I teach women just like you how to ditch the body image issues, gain confidence, and lose the emotional weight to look and feel irresistible at any size. If you would like to learn more about my coaching program and see if you're a good fit for enrollment, please schedule a free confidence clarity call at irresistibleicing.com/call. The link is also in the show notes. Okay, guys, today I am going to be sharing my postpartum story with you. So for those of you that follow me on Instagram, which if you don't, I am at Irresistible Icing. I have, you know, been sharing Instagram stories since the birth of my son and sharing pictures of him and also sharing sharing some of my experience as I dealt with several different complications postpartum. I really got hit with a quadruple whammy after I delivered him, and this was not something that I have ever dealt with before. I did not deal with this with the birth of my daughter. My recovery with Catalina was, it was very simple, it was very smooth, it went wonderful, it went perfectly, and it was not the case this time, which, you know, just goes to show that every pregnancy is different. And I know that this is, you know, some of you have been following, like I've been doing some of the pregnancy videos and podcasts throughout, and I felt it was only fair to share this story with you to wrap that up, but also because I strongly believe that the story that I'm going to share with you could save someone's life. And I'm not saying that to be dramatic whatsoever, because this is something that I was not fully aware of, what happened to me. And what happened to me has also been dubbed as the silent killer. And I want to talk about it. I want to educate people. And I want to use the platform that I've been given to put my voice out there and share my story. Even if it helps one person or it saves one person, then it's completely worth it to me. So I know this is not, you know, necessarily in the norm of, you know, body image and confidence, but it does fall in the lines of listening to your body and having a better, like when you have a good relationship with yourself and with your body, I think you're more likely to be in tune with things when they're not necessarily going well. And you're able to kind of pick up on, you know, how you're feeling and what you're going through, where when you're not connected to your body or you're so disgusted and not, you know, aware of what you're thinking and feeling about yourself, that you may not tap into these things as much. So also, you know, use this as a lesson that it's really important, whether you're pregnant or not, that we are having these, like having better relationships with yourself, having a relationship with your body, not being afraid of it, because it could save your life. You know, whether it's what I'm going to talk about with postpartum or it's something else that's going on for you that has nothing to do with pregnancy, you know, this is why, one of the other many reasons why we need to have this relationship with ourselves and our body and really tap into when we're just feeling off. Because sometimes it's not drastic. Sometimes it's this little thing that feels off, and, you know, we need to talk about it. So this is probably going to be a really long episode if you're listening on the podcast, or a really long video if you're here watching on YouTube. But this is a story, guys. This is a big old story, because I have gone through a lot in the last couple of weeks. My son is now 3 weeks old, if you're listening to this in real time. And I've had several things happen, and it has not been the normal recovery period that I envisioned. I do want to just say that at the time that I am recording this, I feel good. I feel, I'm not going to say I feel back to normal, because nobody is back to normal 3 weeks after they have a baby, complications or not. Even if there were no complications, you don't feel like yourself 3 weeks after you have a baby. There's a lot of things going on. And I think that's another thing, and we can save that for another video, that we need to talk about the fact that, you know, I don't know where this misconception came along that women have a baby and they're supposed to magically feel normal again, or feel like themselves again, or feel how they felt before they had the, before they even got pregnant. And, you know, I kind of believe it takes just as long as it did to get like the pregnancy, like 9 months in, 9 months out. And even at 9 months out, you may not feel like yourself yet. It takes a long time, and we need to give ourselves more grace and more forgiveness that your body is doing the most. When you're having a baby and growing a child and going through delivery and going through all the things that women go through in that process, we need to give ourselves a little more grace and a little more forgiveness that we're not supposed to feel back to normal a month later, 3 weeks later, a couple months later even. And, you know, that's where I'm at right now. So I'm healthy. I am doing so much better. I think for the most part, I am out of the woods and I'm going to be okay. We know that I'm going to be okay. And I want to share the story with you. So let's just dive in and get into it, because there's a lot here to unpack. So I delivered my son, Javi, 3 weeks early. So he was born at 37 weeks, almost 38 weeks, actually. But for the sake of time, we're going to say 3 weeks, because it was at 37. So he was born about 3 weeks early. And that was because I was experiencing higher blood pressure. So I am someone who has never had blood pressure issues. I'm always like textbook perfect with my blood pressure. And towards the end of my pregnancy, the same thing happened with Catalina, where I started to get my blood pressures elevated just a little bit. And that's really bad when you're pregnant, because high blood pressures can turn into a condition called preeclampsia. Okay. And when you have preeclampsia, that can be fatal. It can cause like organ damage. It can cause a lot of really, really major problems. And I was starting to experience some swelling. So I actually had been sent to the hospital multiple times, I think 3 times before I even had my scheduled C-section, because of where my blood pressures were, and they were able to get them down. They stabilized, the swelling went away, and I was doing, you know, good. I also, and I did a video on this as well, in this pregnancy, I developed gestational diabetes, which was being controlled with diet. Towards the end, I did have to take a little bit of insulin at night to control my fasting numbers. So I had these two things kind of working against me, which is why I had 2 to 3 office visits a week towards the end, and the doctors decided to take him a little bit earlier than was originally scheduled. So I had my son October 26th. Via C-section, and the C-section, it went pretty good, I think. It was a little different from the last, so I'll talk about that too. So, number one, when I came into the OR to do my, the spinal, where they give you the numbing for the procedure, the spinal block, it took a lot longer than it did the first time. So I just remember like thinking, oh my God. And I remember even saying to them, are you done yet? Like, you've got to get this in there, because I can't do this anymore. Because it's also very uncomfortable. It's very painful. You're sitting on the edge of a bed. You cannot move because you're trying to put this spinal needle thing in your back, in your spine. And I remember them sticking me a couple different times. And that was weird to me. And I'm going to circle back to that, because we're going to talk about that some more. And then when I was on the OR table, it took a little bit longer this time to get my son out than it did for my daughter. And they said that was because he was breech and he was butt first. So, I mean, at one point they were like really pulling and like tugging. And my husband even said like he could see my whole head and body like moving off the table. And it was a little strange. That was starting to freak me out a little bit, I'm not going to lie. And then he came out and it was beautiful, and hearing that cry for the first time and seeing his little body was just so, there's like this sigh of relief that you have, because even though all my ultrasounds were coming back normal. All my genetic testing, everything was coming back with no problems. There's always this part of me, and if you're a parent, you might feel this way too, or felt this way, that you just keep thinking, but when's the other shoe going to drop? What's really going on? There's something wrong. And until you see that baby and you have that baby in your arms and you know that they're okay, it's like you just can't let your guard down. That's how it was for me. So hearing and seeing him, sorry guys, for the first time was just, it's really emotional and it's like a sigh of relief. And it's just, you know, thank you God, he's healthy and he's doing amazing and we didn't have any problems with him. And you just feel so overwhelmingly blessed. And, you know, thinking, how did I get so blessed to have these two beautiful children? What did I do right in this world why does it not happen for other people? And that's a whole nother topic. And I don't want to get into that right now. And it's just, it's overwhelming. And those feelings were overwhelming me from the get-go of just thinking, oh my God, this is so precious and so fragile, and please don't let it be taken away from me. So that's a whole nother thing. So he came out and he was good and I was doing great. And on the operating table, let me just tell you, my blood pressures were coming down to like a normal level as he was still in my body and they were cutting me open. My blood pressures were stabilizing. The entire time I was in the OR, they were back to normal. I was good. They were back to normal during my hospital stay because, you know, they're checking you every hour, doing all your vitals, especially for me knowing I had some of these issues. And it was like I was back to normal. The same thing happens with gestational diabetes. In most cases, it goes away after you deliver and you get the placenta and some of these hormones out of your body. And since then, I've been checking my blood sugars at home periodically and they're beautiful. Like that is gone. It's off the table. You know, I'm good to go. I do not have, you know, because sometimes gestational diabetes can turn into type 2 diabetes. And for me, that's not the case. Okay. So as I was in the hospital, I started noticing that my neck and my back were in a lot of pain. And I'm thinking, you know, I almost describe it as I was feeling like ghost pains in my spinal area where the spinal block went in. I know that sounds really strange, but it's the only way I could describe it, where I was kind of feeling some pains where the needles had, because they had poked me several different times. And then that pain throughout the day started to move up into my neck, to where I remember being in the bathroom at one point and crying because my neck hurt so bad to hold my head up. And then as the day and the night progressed, I was still in the hospital at this point, that neck and back pain started to move into my head. And I started to develop like a really, really annoying, awful headache that just would not go away. And I'm on, you know, Percocet and painkiller, you know, different pain medications and such. And nothing was even touching or scraping the surface of this headache that I had. And, it was getting to the point where the C-section pain was like minimal compared to the head pain that I was starting to feel. And I mean, I just had a major abdominal surgery, you guys. And it was like, I was up walking around a lot because that's, they want you up and moving. And the sooner and the more frequently you can move around after a C-section, it helps for your healing process. So my husband and I and the baby were going for walks around the L&D floor several times. And I noticed, you know, walking, the more I was standing up and walking, my head hurt so bad. And when I was out in the hallway, it felt like my head just felt like I was full, like it was full of, like when you have a sinus infection or something. That's the best way I could describe it. And so I kept complaining to the nurses and I had lots of people come in to see me to make sure I was okay and ask if there was anything I needed, including the team, the anesthesia team came in to see me as well. And the way they described it to me is they said, it sounds like this might be what we call a spinal headache. And a spinal headache is something that can happen after either an epidural or a spinal block. And there's other procedures outside of labor and delivery where this happens when you get anything in your spine. And basically, what that means is that when they put the needle in your spine, it can poke a hole. And so the spinal fluid starts to leak. And that spinal fluid can travel up to your head, and there's like space around your brain where this fluid starts to fill, and that's what's causing the headache and the fullness and everything like that. And I was like, oh. And so they told me that, you know, the only thing really, these can kind of, sometimes these things subside, they can go away on their own. They recommend drinking caffeine, which is rare that a doctor tells you to drink caffeine, right? And I'm a Diet Pepsi girl. I love my Diet Pepsi. It's like my coffee. So I was like, cool, bring me all the caffeine, right? They're like, sometimes it kind of just goes away on its own and the pain will subside and you'll be okay. If it doesn't, then the only way that we really can fix this is called a blood patch epidural, which is where they draw blood from your body and then they put that blood back into your spinal fluid. To patch up the holes with another epidural. So I'm just thinking, I got here because you guys put needles in my back and poked a hole. The last thing I want is another epidural in my back. So I was like, let's treat this conservatively. Let's see if I can just, do the caffeine, do the medication, see what happens, and we'll go from there. And I said, okay, cool. I had the C-section on Monday. I was discharged, cleared to be discharged on Wednesday, and I actually started to feel a lot better. I could stand up without being in a ton of pain in my head. I was able to, take a shower, put makeup on, do my hair, which the day before I tried to shower and I couldn't do it because I couldn't even stand, like, put my hands over my head to wash my hair. I could not do that. That's how much pain I was in. Okay. And that pain, like I said, was overriding the fact that I have this huge incision on my stomach. That was like an afterthought at this point. So I get discharged. I got my makeup on. I'm dressed. And even the nurses were like, oh my God, I can't believe you look like that. You look good. You look like just, you don't look like someone who just had a C-section 2 days ago. And I was in good spirits. I was actually feeling elated. I was feeling really good. I was feeling just, and maybe it's all those good hormones that you get that just have you in like la la land too. I don't know. But I did. I felt like I was doing a lot better. I didn't feel a ton of, I kind of had like a low grade headache, but I didn't feel like I couldn't stand up, or I didn't feel like it was heavy to hold my head up because originally it felt heavy to hold up my head and it hurt. It hurt. I couldn't do it. So I was spending a lot of time like laying down in the bed. And they said that's the thing with a spinal headache. One of the treatments, so to speak, is to lay down because when you sit up, that fluid starts to flow back, down or whatever. So anyway, I get discharged and we leave and we get in the car. And within minutes, you guys, of being in the car, I mean, within minutes, like as soon as we got on the main road, I started to have a full-blown anxiety panic attack. And I haven't had panic attacks in a really long time. There was a time in my life where I suffered from panic attacks. I couldn't leave the house. I had extreme agoraphobia. It was a very dark time. I've shared that in lots of my other content, but this was like a first. I had not had panic attacks in a really, really long time. And everything just started to close in around me, and every car on the road and the highway was a threat to me. And I think a lot of it was just, oh my God, I have this precious little baby in the car. Please don't let anything take him away from me. Please don't let anything happen to him. It's so fragile. He's so precious. Like every car that's around me could take his life. And I was just, it's when you're having a panic attack, they're irrational fears, but they're still fears nonetheless. And so, I was like, Frank, just get us home. Just get us home. I just want to go home and be in my house where it's safe. And so we got home and by the time I got home, I wasn't feeling very good. Like my headache was starting to come back and I was starting to really feel the C-section pain and everything like that. I think just also being out of the hospital where you're laying in the bed the whole t for the most part, you're laying in that bed and you're just kind of able to relax a little bit, and I'm coming home and my daughter's meeting my son and the dog and my parents are there, and this is all great stuff, but there's a lot of overstimulation going on. There's a lot of talking, there's a lot of just they're joyful moments, but it was like I couldn't feel overstimulated at the time. There was just too much going on. And as the night, afternoon and the evening went on, I started to feel worse. I started to feel a lot more pain in my head. That neck and back pain was like coming back. I felt overstimulated. I started getting floaters in my eyes. So I'm someone who also has migraine, and when I get migraine, it starts with black and white little sparkly floaters in my eyes, and then my vision gets down to like a pinhole size, and then that lasts for a good half an hour, and then I get the extreme headache afterwards. So I'm thinking, this rush of hormones is coming out of my body. I get a lot of migraines when I'm pregnant anyway because of the hormonal factor, and I'm thinking, I'm just having a migraine, and this is going to pass. And then the floaters pass, like they always do, but the headache would not go away. And it persisted and it got worse and worse and worse as the evening went on. And the best way I could describe this to anyone is it felt like the worst migraine pain I've ever had got married to the worst sinus infection I've ever had. And they had a baby and it's 100 times stronger. That is exactly how it felt, because it wasn't just the pain, it was also like I felt like I was underwater. I really felt like I was underwater because of the fullness. Like my brain just felt so full of fluid. And as the night went on, my hearing started to go. I couldn't hear very well. I felt like I was literally under the water or something. And where our home is, we are right in a flight zone, for the Navy Air Base. That's also where my husband works. And we have jets, F-18s that fly overhead, all the time, and they're very loud when they fly over. And I remember asking my daughter and my husband, I was like, "Is there a jet flying?" And they're like, "Yeah." Because it just sounded like this little squeaky sound, like I could barely hear the jets flying over my house, which that was alarming. That was terrifying. So that first night, I spent a lot of time on the couch because I couldn't go up and down the stairs yet with the C-section. So we stayed downstairs and I slept on the couch completely flat. And I would take my pain medication and just sleep for like 3 to 4 hours straight because I just wanted it to go away. And every time I would wake up, I still couldn't hear. I still didn't feel that much better. And then I would have to go use the bathroom. And the minute I would stand up, it was like this pain, this excruciating pain in my head that I can't even articulate to you guys. Like it was that awful. And if you've ever had a spinal headache, then you know what I'm talking about. So the first night that I'm home from the hospital, I couldn't even take care of my son. My husband literally did all the feedings, all the changes. He was up with him all night long because I couldn't get off the couch. The only thing I could get off the couch to do was to pee. That was it. So I was to the point in the middle of the night thinking, I'm gonna die. Like, I literally thought I was dying. I was like, at some point, your brain is just gonna like explode and you're gonna pass out on the floor and you're gonna die. And I was to the point where I almost was going to call an ambulance to come get me, because that was another thing I was going through of like, well, if God forbid something happens to me, my husband can't even take me to the hospital and come in with me because of these, we have our kids. And you can only have one person with you in the hospital. So it's like this whole other layer of just stress with COVID and not being able to have family members with you. And anyway, so I made it to the morning, and first thing in the morning, I called the anesthesiologist again because they gave me their number and said, if this gets worse when you get home, sometimes it does, I want you to give us a call back because we can bring you back at any time and do the blood patch epidural. And I was now at the point where I literally didn't care what they did to me. I just needed this pain to go away. Like, that's where I was at with the pain. So I got in touch with them and they got me scheduled to come in to the hospital to have this procedure done. So that day, we also had to take our son to his first pediatrician's appointment, and then we were going to go to the hospital. My husband was going to drop me off at the hospital to have this procedure done, which they said would take like 2 hours. Even at the pediatrician, they looked at me and they're like, "Are you okay?" And I told them what was going on, and they're like, "We can get you a wheelchair downstairs if you think you need it." That's how awful I must have looked. Like, I was in so much pain, I couldn't even function. Like, it was horrible. So anyway, I got to the hospital and the same thing. The receptionist was like, "Ma'am, do you need a wheelchair?" And I'm like, "No, I'm good. I'm good." And I was like slumped over the counter by myself, hanging out, you know, 'cause again, no one can come in with you. And she's like, "Hang on, I'm going to get you a wheelchair." And they wouldn't let me get out of it. So I went and I had this procedure done, which the procedure itself was not bad. They gave me some kind of like medication that made me like kind of zone out a little bit, which was nice. And I had the procedure done. And then as soon as you have the blood patch epidural, what they do is they lay you down completely flat on your back, right? Because they want to make sure that these holes get filled up and the fluid goes away and blah, blah, blah. So they do that. An hour later, they come in and I had a nice little nap from whatever they gave me was some good stuff. When they came back in, I sat up and I felt so effing defeated because I still couldn't hear. I mean, I could hear, but everything was muffled, right? And the pain had not gone down whatsoever. Like, the pain was still excruciating. I'm like, great, here we go. This didn't work. So they lay me back down, and you know, it was probably another hour or so between all the paperwork they had to do, because they're going to discharge me. And also, I noticed that while I was there, my blood pressures were high. They were in like the 140s to 150s, which they were not that high after I gave birth. They were like down to 120. And I'm thinking, well, it's just stress, it's just from the pain. And the doctor, they sent me home. They sent me home and said sometimes it doesn't work for some people, but everything went the way it was supposed to. And then sometimes maybe it takes a little bit longer. If this doesn't get better, we need you to come back in the ER and we need you to have neurological testing done because maybe there's another neurological problem that's happening. That's what you want to hear, right? Like, I didn't have any neurological problems prior to getting pregnant, prior to delivering my son. So I don't think I have any neurological problems, and that's terrifying if I do. So that's adding to my stress and my anxiety and my panic attacks, which, mind you, are still happening periodically throughout all this. And I had them that first night a lot because I thought I was dying. I felt so the more pain I would feel, the more I couldn't hear out of my ears, the more my vision was going, was fueling my panic, like thinking, oh my God, I just had this beautiful baby. It's all going to be taken away from me because I'm going to die and they're going to be left without a mom. Like, it was just, it was awful. So, when I got to the car, I mean, I looked like walking death. I looked horrific. I mean, I was a hot ass mess, you guys, just a hot mess. And it was awful because I was crying the whole time because I'm separated from my new baby. I'm separated from my daughter who, you know, really we were separated from each other because of the birth and everything like that with COVID. And you're just overly emotional because you've just delivered a baby, so you've got all these hormones and you just want to be with your fam. Like, there's this overwhelming sense of just needing and wanting to be with my people, and I can't be with my people, and I keep getting dropped off at a hospital alone and I just wanted to be with my people. And so I get to the car, frustrated because I don't feel better, a little angry that they're even letting me go home, as shitty as I look and feel, and knowing that I'm probably going to come back to the ER tonight because I'm not any better. And as we got home, I started to notice this little glimmer of hope. I started to notice, oh, I can hear better. And it was minute. It was this little teeny glimmer of hope. And the pain started to subside. I got home. I was able to do a couple things, like let the dog out. Like I couldn't even let Chewy out when this was all going on. I let Chewy out. I did some things with my daughter. I straightened up the kitchen counter and I felt like Amy again. And even my voice sounded more like myself because I was in so much pain that I didn't even recognize my voice because I was just so like, oh, you know, when you're in pain, you sound like you're in pain. And I was like, okay, I don't want to jinx this, but I think I'm getting better. And as the night went on, the headache subsided. The hearing was back. I didn't feel like I was underwater. And I'm like, cool, I'm cured. This worked. So, that was on Thursday. This is a Thursday. By Friday, I started to have headaches again. And but they were small headaches. They were just these little subtle, annoying, low-grade headaches. And I'm thinking, well, of course you're having these kind of headaches because you're not sleeping. And you know, when you don't sleep, you get headaches, okay? So by Saturday, which is now Halloween, I can't even describe to you how swollen my legs looked. My legs were not this swollen during pregnancy. I had super swollen feet, super swollen legs. And I'm just justifying it because it's like, well, yeah, you just got out of the hospital. You've got all this fluid inside of you still. You still have swelling. You know, I'm looking it up on the Google, and you still got swelling for weeks after you have a baby. So everything's okay. Got this low-grade headache going on. And I'm starting to notice it's hard to breathe. And I'm thinking, well, because you keep having panic attacks, you can't breathe. And I'm talking about I would try to go upstairs to get dressed or use the shower. And I had to go one step at a time and really take my time because I went upstairs once and I literally could not get air in my lungs. I could not breathe. And I thought I was having a panic attack. And then I probably was because I thought I couldn't breathe. So it's like one thing is fueling the other thing that's fueling the other thing, and it's just a hot mess disaster. So, you know, I'm pressing through thinking, I've just got a headache because I'm tired. I've got swelling because I just had a baby. I'm having panic attacks because I'm having panic attacks for, you know, everything that I went through with the spinal headache. It's just caused me to be very, like, scared and freaking out about my health. So Sunday morning, we had newborn pictures, and I woke up and I did not feel good. Mentally, physically, emotionally, I was not in a good place. And it was the first time that we really had to get ready, you know, full-blown get ready with two kids, with a newborn. We haven't figured this out yet. It was hectic, it was stressful. And that was the first night I had tried sleeping in my bedroom, which was a disaster. I wasn't ready for that yet. And if you're squeamish, you shouldn't be listening to this episode anyway, but I'm going to share TMI. So this is your trigger warning if you don't like talking about certain medical things. But this is the story, you guys. So when I got out of the shower, I put a robe on and I had not put a pad or anything like that on yet. For those of you that, you know, when you have a C-section, you still bleed for weeks and weeks and weeks after. And I had not put that on yet. So I forgot and I had my robe on and I was sitting on the bed. And when I stood up, there was literally, not exaggerating, a gush of blood that went all over the floor and everywhere. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's just, you know, you're bleeding after you have a C-section. And, you know, I guess this was just a whatever. I didn't think anything different. I didn't think anything of it. And I feel kind of stupid now, but I just thought it was, you know, C-section bleeding, you know, vaginal bleeding. So I clean that up, put a pad on, get to the newborn chute, do our thing. And the rest of the day, every time I would use the bathroom, when I would stand up to put my clothes back on, I would notice a gush of blood. Not as big as the first one, but just a little bit. Like on the it would go on the floor and I'm like, "Oh my God, what is going on?" And by that evening, I put two and two together and I realize, "Oh my God. My incision has opened. My incision has opened and I'm bleeding." So by the time I realized that, it was late at night. It was like 9, 10 o'clock at night. I'm not going to go to the ER because it wasn't the whole incision. It was like, a small section. I had my husband look at it. He's like, "It's really not that bad, but we can't let this go untreated, obviously." So first thing in the morning, I call my doctor. This is on a Monday. I call my doctor. They have me come in, and when I get to the doctor's office, they start taking, they're taking your vitals like they do. As she's taking my vitals in both arms, my blood pressure is pretty high. It's like 145, and it's in both arms. Because let me try this one and see, it's high. So then they get the incision, pat, they have to start packing it with tape, this like wound tape or whatever. And they're like, "You're gonna have to do this every single day until it heals. We can have home health care nurses come to see you." And I'm thinking, "Oh my God, like now I have to have nurses come to my house every day to help me. Like this is insane." And she said, and I started telling her my other symptoms. I've had this like low-grade headache. Look at my legs, how swollen they are. Like, oh my gosh, they're really swollen. How I can't breathe. Like, I feel like I can't breathe at times. My chest feels like I can't get enough air inside of it. And then she's like, "Let me take your blood pressure again." And she takes my blood pressure again. And this time it's like 165. Okay. She's like, "Okay, based on all these symptoms that you're having, I think we're going to send you next door to the L&D again and have you like monitored, where they'll hook you up to the monitors for your blood pressure. We're going to take some labs, check all your blood work, and let's just see what's going on with you." I'm like, "Great." So husband and baby and cat are all outside in the car waiting for me because again, they can't come into my appointments. So I get in the car and I'm crying at this point because once again, I've gone to a doctor's appointment that I'm not coming back from. And my daughter has now seen this happen one, two, three. This is like the fifth time, I want to fourth or fifth time that I've gone to a doctor's appointment and I've had to stay at the hospital. So they drive me over because it's literally next door. And I'm already thinking, I know I'm not coming home. Like, there's no way I'm coming home or it's going to be a really long time. And I'm being pulled away from my baby again, and it was super emotional, and I was just in tears, and I was literally in tears the whole, sorry guys, this was really hard. And this is the first time I'm like sharing the whole story out loud, so forgive me. I'm literally in tears walking from the truck where he dropped me off at the front to L&D. I'm just in tears because I'm scared. I don't know what's happening to me. Why am I having high blood pressures again? Why am I so swollen? What is going on? And why? And I have to be separated from my newborn and my family. And all I want is to be with my damn people. I just want to be home, pissed off that I'm waking up every 2 hours at night to feed my son. I just want to be home. So I get there and they check me in, start taking vitals. Have me put on a gown, the whole nine. And as they come in and they're doing all my vitals and my blood pressure and getting me hooked up, y'all, that blood pressure was like, I'm not here. I'm not here for it. That blood pressure was going up and up and up and up. Every reading, it was getting higher and higher. And I remember at one point, it was almost 190. It was almost 190 over, I can't remember the number it was over, but it was 190, which that's a crisis. That's considered a crisis situation. So they said, "We're pretty sure you're having postpartum preeclampsia. That can sometimes happen." And that's what I had no idea that was a thing, because you're always told that preeclampsia, the cure for preeclampsia is to deliver your baby and it goes away. I did not know that postpartum preeclampsia was a thing. So they said, I hate to tell you this, but we're going to have to admit you. And what we have to do for this is you have to be on a 24, at least a 24 hour drip of magnesium sulfate. Magnesium sulfate is given to you so that you don't seize. And I'm thinking, seize? Because with your preeclampsia and your blood pressure so high, the fear is that you will have a stroke or a seizure, and that could potentially lead to you dying if it's not treated. This is like hitting me like a ton of bricks. I'm thinking, oh my God, like what? So they said also when you're on magnesium, and this was the nurse's words, they're like, when you're on magnesium, you are literally going to feel like shit because it's like a relaxer. And not in a good way. It's not like a muscle relaxer where you're like, oh, I feel good. It's like makes all your muscles and your body turn to noodles. You feel like you're a noodle. And because of that, you are not allowed to get out of the bed the entire time you're on it. And that means, yeah, hello, you can't get up to use the bathroom, so we're going to have to put a catheter in you. And I have never had a catheter in my life that wasn't I've only had it done for my C-sections, and I'm already numb. So getting a catheter put in, fully awake, fully unnumb, was traumatizing in and of itself. Having to be there alone, with no family, it was awful. It was awful. And, just my heart was like breaking, and it literally, I felt pain in my heart because I couldn't be there with my baby and my family, and it felt horrible to be away from them. A week before this day, I had given birth, and here I am a week later in L&D without my child, being told your alternative to being here is death. And that was the hardest thing I've ever heard, that they literally told me your alternative to doing this is to die. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like this thing could have killed me. This thing could have killed me. So I get admitted. I get put on the drip. And I'm also told, oh, by the way, you can't eat anything for the entire time. You can only have liquids like Jell-O, which I don't eat Jell-O. I hate Jell-O. It disgusts me. Or broth. That's it. And before I had gotten there, I had not eaten since breakfast. So your girl was hungry. So now I'm hungry too. And I'm weak and I'm out of it and I don't feel like myself. And that medication, that magnesium, it did. It made me feel like absolute shit. I felt horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible. And I was just like in tears the whole time because I just felt this intense, overwhelming sadness that I wasn't with my family and my baby. So we worked it out. My husband came and brought me my stuff, and he stayed with me for a little bit. And when I saw him, he's not someone that cries. He's not a crier. He's not outwardly emotional at all. And when I saw him, I could see it in his face. I could see that look of just like fear almost. Like, and he even said to me, he's like, my eyes just feel like they have so much pressure that I want to cry, but I can't. And, I think is when we all started to realize the severity of what had happened, that here I was at home having a low-grade headache, super swollen, not really able to breathe right, having panic attacks, and this thing, this preeclampsia, was silently trying to kill me. And all I could think was, thank you, God, my incision busted open. Because my incision busted open, I went to the doctor. And because I went to the doctor, they found out that my blood pressures were through the roof. And because they realized my blood pressures were through the roof and they saw my swelling, they sent me to the hospital immediately. Thank you, God, that I was bleeding from my incision. Because if that didn't happen, If that did not happen, I can't think of, it's hard for me to even go there to think about what may have happened, that I may have seized or stroked out on the floor and possibly wouldn't be here right now. That's a reality. And that's really, really scary. That's really scary to think about. And it's just really hard. And so that time in the hospital was rough. When my husband was there, my daughter wanted us to call her on FaceTime. And while I was chatting with her and I saw how awful I looked, number one, I didn't even recognize myself on the camera. And number two, just seeing her sweet little face and wondering why I'm not home, I just remember throwing the phone at Frank and like, I can't talk to anybody right now. Every time I would try to talk to a family member on the phone, I would cry. Every time I was texting people, I was crying. And my children, my family were my motivation to go home and to overcome this and to get better. But at the same time, this sounds really strange, I couldn't look at them. So my husband was doing the most and taking care of everybody and holding it down. Like that's what we do, right? That's what he does. Like we hold each other down and was sending me pictures of the kids and the baby and the Chewy. And at one point I said, I need you to stop doing that. I love seeing everything, but it's breaking me right now. Like it is killing me to not be home. So, that was really hard. And that first 24 hours was rough. I didn't feel good. And my blood pressures, they had me also on like blood pressure medication, the magnesium. And I just, the whole time, I felt so awful. And my headache was getting worse and worse. And I was in fear. I was like in fear that my head was going to explode or I was going to just like still have a seizure or something and die. And I don't, it was just, every thought goes through your head. And every time Frank would leave to go back home, I would feel incredibly sad thinking, I kept thinking maybe I would never see him again, that I wouldn't make it. And I thought, and the thought of him having to do all of this on his own and them not having me, it was just very emotional and very, traumatizing also. And it was hard because I needed to let myself kind of zen out and not get this stressed out and have these worries, but I couldn't. And so they finally came in after the magnesium. After you're on magnesium, you have to then be observed for 24 hours to make sure that you're okay and that you don't have a seizure and die on the floor without the magnesium, and that the medications themselves, the pills, are helping you. So, I was there for 2 days, and once I came off the magnesium, they could give me anxiety medication. They could also give me migraine medication. And once I had those medications, it was like, oh my God, I feel amazing. Not amazing, but I feel some sense of normal again. And that overwhelming fear and everything started to dissipate and go away. And I was starting to feel like, okay, I have a, like, I'm gonna be okay. I'm gonna be okay. I'm gonna beat this. I'm gonna be okay. And so it's just a process. Like once you come off the magnesium, you can't go to the bathroom by yourself the first time. You have to have staff members, nurses come in and help you walk to the bathroom because you're very, very wobbly. You're very uneasy on your feet. And it takes time to feel back to normal, back to yourself, to like regain your strength after you've been on that medication. And it was just scary too because after the first 2 times you use the bathroom on your own, you are in the room by yourself because hello, COVID, and hey, I have a newborn, so my husband is at home with them. And the other thing with that, I'm just gonna side note here for a minute. It's not like Frank could come see me, go back home, and my mom or dad could take his place. It doesn't work that way. The same person has to be like, you cannot switch out your support person because of COVID and not wanting to expose people. So that really sucked. And then being in the room where you're like, am I going to fall down if I go to the bathroom or whatever? Like, no one's in here with me. Because, you know, I've always been like, when your family members are in the hospital, you have to be there with them. You have to advocate for them. You have to be there because you're not in your best state of mind. So that's just a whole other level right now. And that's why, you know, whether COVID affects you directly or not, if you, whether you get the, even if you don't get the virus, this is the fallout. This is the fallout of, even if you have something else happen to you, you're going to have to be in the hospital by yourself, potentially. And people need to, like, that's a whole other topic for another day, but it's like, it's not just about you getting the virus or someone else getting the virus. There's other things that are falling out and have a domino effect because of this crap. Anyway, I digress. So, yeah, you guys, I started to feel a lot better and I got discharged and I came home and I was tired. I was weak. And my blood pressures started to go down even more once I got home. And because the medication they put me on right now takes a lot, it takes some time, but I'm doing so good. My blood pressures are in the 110s and I feel good. I feel like myself again, minus the fact that I'm recovering from a C-section and having a baby, obviously. But let me tell you this too. So this is how swollen I was. From the time I was in the hospital with the preeclampsia to the time I got home, I lost over 20 or 25 pounds, which tells you all of that fluid that was in my body. That is how much freaking fluid was in my body. I'm like, you know, because you're not losing no fat and muscle in 24 hours. That's all fluids that were just, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. So I know this is super chatty and long-winded, and I probably shared a lot of details that aren't even necessary, but I want other women to hear this story and to understand what postpartum preeclampsia is and to know the signs, and that if you have this low-grade headache, if you have this swelling that is abnormally, like it's abnormal swelling, you have to listen to your body. You have to listen to your body and you have to be in tune with these things and don't just write them off as, you know, oh, it's normal or whatever. And even if it is normal and nothing is wrong, and you have to go to the hospital to be checked out, so what? Like, so be it. I would much rather waste a trip to the hospital and find out everything's okay than to pass out on the floor and potentially not be on this earth anymore. You know, and I just didn't know that this was a thing. I didn't realize that you could develop this after the baby comes out. So I was thinking, oh, it's just side effects from the spinal headache. It's just, you know, anxiety. It's just this, it's just that. And, you know, like the doctors have told me, I had a lot of things come at me that kind of compounded. First and foremost, I had the spinal headache. I had the real panic attacks. I had the incision open. And I had the postpartum preeclampsia. So I had like these four things that were coming at me and one kind of compounding the other and the other. So it's actually hard to say what came first, right? And I learned that my incision opening actually opened because there was like a pocket of fluid behind the incision right there. So it's like, was that from the preeclampsia or who knows? Who knows? I am just grateful. I am happy to be here. I am happy to be sleep deprived at the moment. I am happy to be waking up every 4 hours knowing that, you know, I'm here and able to do it. And that, thank you, God, none of this that happened to me had an impact on my son. He is fine. He is healthy. He is doing amazing. And, you know, to be irresistible you is part of that process, is to learn how to be in the moment, to appreciate being here now. And, you know, I didn't take life for granted before, but this was a big wake-up call to really not take it for granted. And that you literally don't have anything if you don't have your health. It's like, everything else is figure outable. I can figure out money. I can figure out other problems. I can figure out weight. I can figure out everything else. But if I don't have my health, what do I have? What do I have? And I think we take that for granted a lot. And, you know, use my story as a wake-up call for yourself, even, that you don't want to take your health for granted. And it's like, you know, something as basic as using the bathroom on your own. I wasn't able to do that. That was humiliating. That was awful. And I will never take that for granted again, right? So it's like, if you have your health, you have everything. Because everything else we can figure out. And we can get through it. So I wanted to share this to kind of wrap up my pregnancy journey, and to also potentially educate someone and notice the signs to look for and to be aware that this does happen. This happens to women. It's a small percentage of women that it happens to. And it is called the silent killer because you brush it off as, you know, tired, as this, as that. And you know, it was pretty serious and it was really scary and it was shaky at times. And, you know, I'm being monitored weekly. I have to have my incision checked every single day and re-cleaned and repacked. And, you know, I'm not recovered. Obviously, I have a long way to go, but my blood pressure is under control. My diabetes is gone. And I've been working very hard on my happiness and working on my mental health. And I just thank you that, like, doctors are so in tune nowadays with women, pregnant women and their mental state, and making sure that we have what we need. And there's no shame, there's no guilt whatsoever in you needing to take medication. I have Ativan that I'm taking as needed, and knock on wood, I haven't had to take it in, you know, in a while, but I have it if I start having a panic attack or I feel a strong sense of anxiety. And I went back on Wellbutrin, which is also to help with depression and mood and such. And I don't want, and I'm going to put it out there because I want people to understand there's no shame in needing help and needing medication, and that depression and anxiety and panic are real. And we don't have to sit around and feel ashamed and sit in the dark and not, we have to talk about these things, you know? And so because I've had such bad depression and anxiety and panic in the past, I know what to look for. I know the warning signs. I know what can potentially happen if I don't get it under control and monitor it. And I refuse to live like that again. I refuse to live my life terrified of leaving the house. And I feel like I'm pretty much at that place again where I'm leaving the house. I need to leave the house or I'm going crazy being here all day. But I know what to look for. And again, it goes back to, you have to get to know yourself. You have to develop a better relationship with yourself so that you know the warning signs, whether they're physical symptoms or whether they're mental symptoms. You can recognize and you're aware of when you're not yourself. And having to take medication for anxiety or depression should not be looked at any differently than needing medication for high blood pressure. Because either one is just as bad. And we need to stop shaming people and hiding and not talking about these things. And so that's why I wanted to share my story with you. So if you're still listening to this, I appreciate you. I love you. And I thank you for rocking out with me and listening to my story. And, you know, feel free to share this with someone else. Feel free to share this with other people you know. I personally am not someone who wants to hear someone else's horror stories. And it was hard for me to read anything when I was going through this at the time, because I just kind of wanted to live in the ignorance is bliss bubble, because I just had to survive and get through it. But now that I'm better and I've been reading and educating myself and learning more about this condition, you know, let's educate other people to know that this is a problem. This is a problem that people can experience. And you have to know the warning signs because they are so subtle and they are so easy to brush off. So I hope you know that this was helpful in some way, and I thank you guys for listening. Thank you for following me and my journey. And you know, so many of you also reached out to me while I was in the hospital, whether it was, you know, during the delivery or during this postpartum, or whether it was both or everything. And we've had people reach out to us, and you know, some people, you know, whether it, whatever, messages, emails, some people have sent things, and it's been a blessing. And I appreciate all of your support and all of your kind words and your prayers and your encouragement. And that gets me through these hard times as well. And so I am recovering. I am getting back in the groove of the podcast and of my business, and getting back in a routine, learning how to be a mom of two, learning how to be a family of five with little Chewy. And, yeah, it's a wild ride, you guys. It's a wild ride. So continue to follow the podcast. Subscribe if you haven't already. You can also keep up with me on Instagram. That's the best place to reach me. I'm at Irresistible Icing, and that is where I share everything going on behind the scenes. So you can follow me there. Thank you so much for listening and rocking out with me, and I will catch you in the next one. Bye, guys.